The intention has to be there.
Ah.
Ummah, one nation, knowingly, purposely, trying to go under the banner of one God.
One God, yes.
This is one way.
Sure.
Again, about that zero, let me explain it again in a different way. I would like to give you example, materialistic example.
Sure,
this
sure.
is one way in yes, order so to let, understand.
Let's get
in
a
order
feeling
to understand
of what we
this spiritual thing,
yeah.
the deep ma'rifah, knowledge of, you know, by the way, the whole universe is full of so many different phenomena. We're not claiming we understand all of them, but we can try. To tell you what that how that zero in reality is and how that particular one works, which makes the slogan of Allahu Akbar, I give you an example. For a second, for the sake of argument, okay, you don't even have to close your eyes. You can just purposely think about making or building something in your imagination. Let's say a bike.
Right.
Bicycle.
Right. I've got a picture of a bike in my mind.
So you have it?
I've got it.
Who created it? You.
I did. Yeah.
So in the course of our discourse with each other, forget about it. For a second.
Okay.
That bike. Where is it?
It's gone.
In your imagination. It's gone.
Gone.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's into my subconscious.
That's the zero I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for God's mercy and will and power and one thing, to give life to us, to that particular zero.
Zero.
For one
moment.
Less than moment. This
right.
is for, you know. When you're talking about this, this is because all we are familiar with this kind of understanding.
Sure.
For one small fraction of a second, an imaginary, you know, moment, which could be very, very, very in the blink of an eye. If God takes his intention, which is merciful, which is mercy upon us,
of course
for
is.
One second, if he takes that intention away,
we
would end up to be nothing. That's the zero I was talking about. So in order to explain this, that whatever we say, we have to mean it. We have to understand it as much as we could.
Sure.
The word Ummah is of this kind of significance.
My goodness.
Back to your question.
My goodness.
What happened to Muslims? We can't say what happened to Islamic
no,
Ummah.
No, we're not talking about Islamic Ummah.
Brother, Ummah is something to become. It's not a giving thing.
That's right. And that's what we're trying to get to,
and
isn't
this
it?
This is the reason. This is the reason for saying Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, was and still is. A leader in order to lead us to that particular intended, serious business.
Well, let me
to become one nation.
Well, let me just throw something into this argument. Because Imam Khomeini, I remember, may God bless his great soul, said that the problem at this moment in time with the Muslim world is this, that you do not lead yourselves to the Quran, but you take the Quran to yourselves.
In other words, whatever you like,
whatever you like,
desire,
you try
you wish,
to justify.
You try to find a passage in Quran,
To justify
and apply to yourself.
Now, let me take that just a little step further. Wasn't that the sin that Bani Israel was guilty of, in which they lost all connection with God whatsoever?
In general term, the answer is yes. But there is so many different details attached to it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you go astray, you know, Satan won't let you go.
No, he doesn't.
You know what? Some people think Satan, wants to take your beliefs away, which is true.
Yeah.
He wants to take your religion, your beliefs away.
Yeah, he wants to do
that. But that's not the end of it.
No.
This is where research, studying, deep understanding helps you, help us to understand. You can be a kafir. You can be an infidel, but you could still have some kind of dignity left in you by doing a good virtue, by how you're dealing with people, with your own people,
yes,
to begin with.
Yes, but you're talking about absolute humiliation and abasement.
Exactly. You know, When Satan takes the religion away from you, your beliefs.
That's only one part.
This is only one part.
Part of it.
Okay? But he won't let go. That's not good enough for him because he swear by God. He swear by God that I'm going to take him all the way to the hellfire.
So he's going to abase him.
Okay? So the disgrace will follow. The disgrace
this
is this.
Yeah.
You're not only without any beliefs, which gets you to the point of being zero again.
Yeah.
But he wants you to be disgraced totally.
In the sight of Allah subhanahu
wa ta'ala. In the sight of Allah. Then in the sight of humanity.
Yeah. And the sight of humanity as well. Yes,
you know, you have to be very careful to study this thing.
Sure.
Again, research is to study something, a phenomenon or something, very, very carefully. That makes it
In order to draw proper conclusions.
It's not just to look for something.
No, no.
You have to research. You have to get back to the point again.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, when you do that research, it's just a stepping stone to a wider body of knowledge.
And it's only a tool.
Yeah, it's only a tool. We're not talking about something that ends
there.
Let's
not get carried away with it. Say, oh, okay, I'm a researcher.
Yeah.
So what?
So what? Where do we go from here?
Yeah. All we have to trying to, you know, find the right path, which is the straight path, and stay on it. You can be on the right path.
Yeah.
But again, devil is not going to go anywhere.
No.
Because it's where by the power of God Almighty, that I'm going to take every single of this so-called creature of yours, except for those that I cannot mess with.
Well, Dr. Hassani, you take us to a very, very important point in this discussion, a very significant point in this discussion. You know, in every revolution, there's a kind of demon, if you like.
And we've seen so many of them.
Yeah, there's a kind of hate figures in revolutions. I mean, if you take the 1789 French Revolution, the aristocracy were the demons of that revolution.
And the guillotines.
And the guillotine, you know, cutting their heads off.
Cutting
or whatever.
Heads off and so on and so forth.
And even Robespierre of the 1789 revolution in France made the claim that terror, state terror, was a tool and a valid means by which to destroy the enemies of the new republic.
And by the way, the terror back then had a different definition.
Exactly.
There wasn't no good terrorist, bad terrorist. Like
so I'm not drawing any parallels with the French Revolution. But what I'm saying here is that what...
But the idea, the concept was this, Brother George, really to terrorize you in a true sense.
Yeah.
To scare you away from what your goal might be.
But exactly. Exactly.
And not necessarily by physically assassinate you.
Yeah.
So we have to be... You know, very careful about this stuff.
That's
because nowadays, the word terror, terrorist, is used in a broad way. And so, selective one. As far as the dirty politician concerned.
What I'm saying is that this was a materialistic revolution.
Okay.
1789, this liberty, equality, fraternity.
Give me liberty or give me death.
Yeah, give me brotherhood. Give me liberty. Give me... equality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That was the three slogans of the French Revolution. The reality is something entirely different, but that was in a materialistic sense. I'm trying to just draw parallels with the fact that, you know, in a context where Europe was talking about enlightenment, we're talking about something here far more significant than that. We're talking about a reality for which even the French Republic is far and miles away from and still hasn't understood this concept yet. About what the true reality and nature of man is. They've had these wonderful slogans of egality, of equality, liberty, and brotherhood, and fraternity. But Islam is a way ahead of all that.
Way ahead.
Now, what I'm seeing here is that there is this claim, like every revolution, it has its demons. And as you say, you know, it has its enemies. But Imam Khomeini didn't hate anyone. He didn't say things out of... just simply trying to justify that the Iranian masses would all cling to this particular slogan because he just felt that was the right thing to say for the moment. When you are saying that the United States of America is the great Satan, he means it in the context of what you've just said, that it's not enough for us just to abandon Islam. It's not enough for us to forget about Tawheed. It's not enough for us to become... as you say, unbelievers, they want to really humiliate this country so that people forget about it wherever it is on the map. They think Iran is some petrol station in Dallas somewhere.
So many different things, you know, and I have to touch as many as I can.
Yeah.
You know the reason for that humiliation? Lifestyle.
Yeah, of course it is.
Look at about the Western lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay, they take our beliefs away.
Mm.
They won't let go.
No.
The disgrace part comes is here. It,
yeah.
Homosexuality.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
I mean, how low can you get?
Exactly. But as you see, it'll
go
further.
You know the story about Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah.
And the story goes on.
And on.
I'm trying to be so precise about this
That's
thing.
Right. Because we're going back to the
because
Quran.
Because we're going back to the Quran again.
Quran again.
And we have to cover so many different issues.
Issues, yes. Because what I'm saying is that Imam...
The other statement I should add
yeah.
in this particular one, because you mentioned the word claim again,
yeah.
and you draw a good parallel between different revolutions. My answer to you is this. Words have to be matched with
action.
Again, another expression, which makes sense, which is true.
Mm.
Practice what you
preach. And Imam Khomeini lived up to that.
And this is where the church went wrong too. I mean, this is all long story.
Of course it is.
But in order to understand, remember the one of the introduction I gave you, and it was kind of lengthy, you know, and it seems like at the time it was getting boring or whatever. But the thing is this:
yeah.
we have no other way around it except to analyze all this stuff.
Yes.
And constantly come back to it.
Yes.
This is very important.
Yeah, and broaden the
and
model.
Don't forget about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to be comprehensive.
Has to be. Okay? So the difference between all the revolutions, the materialistic, okay, the worldly revolution with this particular one, which we say, proudly we say, the Islamic revolution.
Yes.
Which happened in Iran 30-some years ago. Still is going on.
Yes.
Do you hear anything about French Revolution?
No, we don't.
So good.
I mean,
why you don't hear about it?
Yeah, because
I'm not here to answer all these questions.
No, no.
All if I succeed in doing one thing on this program, you know, God willing, that's more than I can handle.
Sure.
And that thing is this: to bring to your attention the kind of question, the kind of path that you should take in order to study
exactly.
different cases.
Exactly.
And this is why humanity still has a lot to work on.
Yeah.
I mean. Talking about the propaganda machine,
yeah.
constantly bombarding.
With lies,
with mere lies.
Lies and hypocrisy.
Lies, insulting,
yes.
follows with insulting.
Yes.
Threatening.
Yes.
Bullying. Wasting sources.
Yes.
Who's going to be responsible for this?
That's right.
Who's going to answer it? Nobody. All those empty claims. Okay?
Yeah.
Of course, they're going to say, you know, the other side of the defense, the grass is greener.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a promise.
Yeah.
But is it really? Is it greener?
Mm. Well, that's up to debate, isn't it? I mean, that's
this is all in the shape of questions.
Yeah, because as you say, that's the what do you call the proof in the pudding is in the eating. So that's exactly it.
I give you another example. The criteria in order to do the system of check and balance. You know how where you go wrong? Contradiction. 2 + 2 = 4.
Four.
It's
not
four
five.
For you, or it's four for me, or it's four for both of us.
Mm. That's the reality.
2 + 2 = 4 on Saturday. How about Friday?
It'll be 4 on Friday.
Four on Friday.
But they want to make you believe that it's 5.
They want to make you believe.
You believe on it's 5
Africa,
on a Friday.
That African lives differently
yeah.
than European.
Yeah.
And Asian.
Yeah.
And Latin America.
Yeah.
And U.S.
Yes.
And Mexico, for that matter.
Yeah.
And we live this. We cannot betray ourselves in order to think differently because we want to think differently. This is very important also.
Sure. Sure.
Contradiction. Anytime 2 + 2 = 4, something's wrong. Something, as they say in the state, something seriously wrong.
Right. Let me throw something else at you because, of course, I mean, you're old enough to remember this. And, you know, there was the Cuban Revolution. That was the way back in the 60s. There was also a revolution in Nicaragua around about the same time.
Sandinistas.
Yeah, the Sandinistas. Back in 79.
It was coincidentally the time was the same.
So it was the same. But we have to ask the question, what makes the difference between, say, the Sandinista revolution, which was based on a Marxist ideology or something similar to that, and the divine revolution? Because the divine revolution is something that Imam Khomeini impressed a great deal on the rest of the world, which is why we are still living it. We are still in the process of this, because as you say, whatever has happened in the Muslim world in the past, well, that's the past. But we are trying to get to the Islamic goal, which is from the Quran. And that is about purification and perfection. And what the slogan is saying, Allahu Akbar, in the beginning, is that without the spiritual dimension, there's no success for mankind.
Very good question. Very good question. And I'm trying very hard to explain it the best way I can.
Yeah, but do your best.
Okay? I want to give it a shot.
Sure.
First of all, divine task, divine mission requires divine understanding. Let me talk about narration.
Yes.
From the impeccables.
Yes, from the infallibles. Yes, the infallible imams.
Something to the fact that the price. Listen to this word. And again, the word means a lot of things. If you understand what it means, then it takes you to what it's supposed to.
Sure.
The price of your body is heaven.
Mm. The price of your body is heaven.
The price of your body, the way you live,
is heaven.
Materialistically,
is heaven.
Is heaven.
Sure.
Hell is not made for you.
No.
You're human, for God's sake.
Mm.
Again, goes back to the definition.
Yeah, yeah.
God willing, I have to get to this Quranic reference on due time.
Sure.
Okay? The price of your body is heaven,
yeah.
But the price of your soul is only God. Think about what I said.
Exactly.
And the impeccable says
that's
this.
Right. That's right.
So that makes it what? That makes it more interesting, yet more difficult.
Mm.
In order to value yourself, this is important.
Mm.
This is where humanity go wrong.
Yeah.
You remember?
Mm.
Satan wants to take you to the wrong way.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
To a dark alley of disbelief.
And a basement.
Then disgrace you.
Disgrace you.
The disgrace part is this, that you lose your soul.
Soul.
Brother, if you own something in this materialistic world, let's say you cannot pay your mortgage on your house. I like to give you this example.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the way of Quranic teaching and understanding. Any occasion wants to tell to teach you something very important, give you examples. And the definition, for example, is this, to show you something feelable, sensible, with all these five senses, in order to think to take you to a different level.
Sure.
This is the definition of mathal, examples. I give you examples. If you behind you paying your mortgage, what a bank will do, and they're good at it. They're doing it in U.S., they're doing it in U.K.
Right.
I'm sure they're going to be doing it in Scotland.
Sure.
Okay?
Well, it's happening already.
What they do? If you're behind paying your car payment, they take it away.
Well, first of all, there's a warning, and then you're thrown out.
The final act.
Final
they're
going
to take it away.
Yeah.
But with God, it doesn't work like that.
Mm.
See? When talking about references, you talk about the reality. You're talking about the greatness of a unique, I should say. When you say fetra, the mere translation, you know, to give it to you in a nutshell, the fitra is a particular, unique creation. The Torah suggests that. Those who are familiar with the word fitra,
yes,
that Torah, at the end, it suggests that this is a unique one. This is not the Torah of, you know, in Arabic, we have two kind of genders.
Right.
For every
yes,
word.
Male and, yeah.
Male and female.
Female.
But that's not the case.
No.
Okay?
Mm.
And so what's the price of your soul? Let me put it this way. If you owe God something by disobeying him in the hereafter, do you have money to pay in order to release yourself from being hostage?
No.
What have you lost? What they take as a hostage? If you want to use this phrase.
Yeah.
They take your own reality, your own soul.
So.
This is very important.
So
beyond this material, again, this is not repetition. This is important issues.
Yes.
And we might come back to it again.
Yeah.
So the least reward for your body is what? Heaven. But how about your soul? You're made of a two different kind of whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Whatever things I should call it.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah. Composition.
Composition.
You're a composition.
I even don't use the word composition.
Yeah.
Things. Things is a common word, brother, in every single language.
Sure.
In Arabic, we call it shay.
Sure.
And there is no exclusion.
Sure.
It includes everything.
Sure.
In Farsi, we call it different name. In English, we call it thing.
Yeah.
This humanity, what we call Bashar or insan. Bashar is referring to the skin.
Sure.
Insan, it goes a little bit further. And the root meaning of it, that's a totally different subject. We're not going to get into that.
Sure.
Because our time is limited, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the thing is this. You are made differently. You are a unique. That's why the angel didn't understand. Why are you doing this?
Yeah, because I couldn't understand what the human
was
all about.
What was the response?
Well, I know what you do not know.
I know what you do not know. Do you think the angel find out? Of course they did.
Yeah.
During the course of history, course of time, they saw the movement of Ashura. God putting Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, on one side, they said, look, that's why I created this.
Yeah.
This is the Khalifa. This is the successor of my mission, my being. Now the angel, they could think about it.
Yes.
But before, they didn't pay attention to the word successor. They thought it's something, just like whatever, their imagination or their background of whatever they witnessed, maybe.
Well, I mean, this brings us back to what we said in our previous program as well, that the combination of both the Quran and the Holy Prophets, Ahlul Bayt, is what gives us the ingredients that we need to get that God into, to have that reward of our soul as God.
And Brother Ejaz, this is very important. God put this in my mind to say it. The same way that Imam Hussein was a good example for angels to see what a successor might be. Okay? Because we're talking about the man who changed the world and still is. And will be. Okay? I keep repeating this.
That's right.
Because this is the belief that we're talking about.
Yeah.
God also showed the angels Imam Khomeini. You see?
Yes.
In the 20th century.
Yeah.
At the time that everybody's giving up.
Giving up on religion.
Giving up of everything. Hope.
Yeah.
God is holding Imam Khomeini upright and say, look, this is a good example why I created this.
And
it was worth it.
Yes. And of course of the fact that, as you quite rightly said, this world is not going to be without a successor. And therefore, Imam Khomeini was the example for us in the late 20th century. Dr. Hasni, thanks very much for your valuable contribution. Again, we have run out of time in this session. But in the next session, I hope that we will now carry on with this argument with the impact of what Imam Khomeini did with the great Satan. So let's get into that argument in the next session. But it leaves me just to say, may the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. And thank you for our audience who have been listening to us today. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Light. Another groundbreaking archaeological discovery in Peru is now catching attention. 800-year-old human remains south of the capital, Lima, highlight the ancient burial rituals in the South American country. The remains of 8 adults and children buried in a common tomb were found by a group of workers laying gas pipes at the site. They were buried with food, dishes, and musical instruments, including flutes. Archaeologists say that the 8 people lived in the ancient town of Chilca, some 60 kilometers from Lima. They say some of the bodies were buried with the shells on their heads and had bags with cocoa leaves inside them. They say the discovery will shed more light on the pre-Hispanic history of the region. Another 30 human remains had been discovered in Chilca in 2018.
A taxi company in Thailand has turned its vehicles into mini vegetable gardens to help its drivers who are out of work due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The point of this project is so that employees have something to do to reduce stress. To a certain extent, it has helped with reducing our stress, but it isn't really the answer to the situation right now. Even though the drivers and the staff are able to harvest the vegetables for food, it's just part of solving the problem. I think the government should also step in to help us too.
The taxi company is growing vegetables on the roofs and hoods of 300 disused taxis that are parked idly. Prolonged COVID-19 lockdowns have affected the drivers' income negatively so that they are unable to pay the lease of their vehicles. Therefore, working in these gardens has reduced their stress and provided the drivers and their families with food. Amongst the thousands of shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar lies a tiny tea house with a long history that attracts visitors with its famous treats. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House is the smallest and oldest tea house in the Iranian capital. The 2-meter-wide cafe belongs to 63-year-old Kazim Maputian, who took over the century-old business from his father. He serves a wide range of teas, but his signature is the tea of kindness, a mixture of mint, lemon, and saffron. His tea house is the most famous in Tehran, serving some 200 customers every day. It used to be a tourist attraction before the coronavirus pandemic. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House was enlisted as Iran's intangible cultural heritage in 2016. Farmers working on the border between Venezuela and Colombia have discovered a tusk that is believed to belong to an American mastodon from 16,000 years ago.
We went to the place and the fossil was there, and then we realized it was something very important. We rescued it because there was a risk of it being lost, and at this moment, it's in the Archaeological and Paleontological Museum of Agualinda.
The experts say the discovery would help them with complementing information about extinct animals and ancient settlements. They say the finding of the tusk in the site would increase its potential contribution to scientific researchers. The discovery of mega faunal fossils in South America has been common over the past decades. In 2019, more than 800 mammoth bones were discovered near Mexico. A group of Cambodian students has designed a manned drone in an attempt to beat traffic. The drone has 8 propellers and a school chair for the pilot's seat. It can carry a human weighing up to 60 kilograms. The creative students say the drone is still in its early stages of development and testing. Equipped with 4 batteries, the human carrier drone can fly up to 4 meters and around 10 minutes above the ground.
Here we have big problems related to traffic jams, so we did some research about this before building the drone. We came up with this drone project as we had the idea that we wanted to solve some problems for our society by making a drone taxi, as well as investing drones for firefighters to help put out fires.
The prototype can or has cost around $20,000 to build. The designers say they need 2 more years to complete the project. The school has expressed hope that the drone could be used in everyday life.
Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted an art show themed with Aspiration for Peace. Organized by the Economic Cooperation Organization, the event seeks to shed light on the beauty of a global peace through the language of art. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Each one of these delicate works of art are created by an artist from a different country, each trying a unique way to highlight the need for lasting peace in the world. Dubbed Aspiration for Peace, the art gallery is organized by Echo Cultural Institute with the aim of promoting global peace through the language of art.
By holding this event, we want to send a message of peace to all countries. We invited diplomats from all embassies here to gather and unite and celebrate a peaceful gathering. Also, the artworks showcased here are created by artists from various countries, and this represents how beautiful it is for nations to live peacefully.
Art helps connect different civilizations and nations. It helps us bridge the cultural gaps and find commonalities. This will establish mutual understanding and harmony among nations, and therefore conflicts can be avoided.
In some of the artworks, images immediately communicate with the audience, even if faces are veiled. These pictures try to narrate the story of Afghan women and an uncertain future that they're facing amid the Taliban's takeover of power in Afghanistan.
The events that are taking place in my country, Afghanistan, are so painful. It might take hours to tell you how hard it is for an Afghan girl to live in insecurity and uncertainty. But through the language of art, you can understand all these words without the need for translation.
The art show was held on the occasion of the International Day of Peace. Observed every year on September 21st, the occasion was introduced by the UN General Assembly as a chance to strengthen the ideals of peace through observing 24 hours of nonviolence and ceasefire.
A picture is worth a thousand words, and indeed, no words can be as strong as the strokes of an artist in speaking the beauty of peace. And this is how the universal language of art transcends the political and cultural boundaries and touches the hearts of viewers, no matter what language they speak. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
French slackliner has wowed watching crowds in Paris by crossing from the Eiffel Tower to the other side of the River Seine. Nathan Poulenc walked across a rope suspended 70 meters above the ground. He finished the 600-meter course in half an hour. On one point, he sat and lay on the rope before arriving at his destination, the Chaillot Theater. The 27-year-old daredevil practiced 4 years to perform this show. Poulenc said that he was staying focused during the walk, and that was very challenging.
When I was young, I had fear of heights, and I learned to contain it. During the performance, I really didn't feel it. I really didn't have that problem. I felt some stress over starting it, but no vertigo, no.
Poulenc said that it was an uneasy experience, but he was happy to share it with the public. The athlete started slacklining 10 years ago. In 2019, he performed a 510-meter-long walk between two skyscrapers in Paris.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
SpaceX's first all-private crew have successfully concluded the first orbital mission in history with no professional astronauts on board. The four tourists on board the SpaceX Dragon capsule landed in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida after spending 3 days in space. The capsule was then transported by helicopter to the Kennedy Space Center, where on Wednesday they took off aboard. During the flight, the crew members' vital signs were monitored to study the effects of the environment of space on complete novices. The Inspiration4 mission was an effort aimed at encouraging the democratization of space. It sought to prove that the cosmos are accessible to crew that have not been handpicked nor been in training for years. Visitors and keepers of a zoo in the Peruvian capital, Lima, are thrilled over the birth of 8 baby penguins from the vulnerable Humboldt species. Zookeepers say the chicks were hatched in July and they're expecting 6 more additions later in October. Currently, the newborns spend their days resting in their nests and being fed by their parents. The Huachipa Zoo currently has 42 Humboldt penguins and is working on recovering the species population.
We have 8 2-month-old chicks and 6 eggs. In 42 days, those eggs will hatch and the chicks will come out. The important thing about Humboldt penguins is that we are recovering their population because they are in a vulnerable state. We are increasing their populations with the breeding we are doing in the zoo.
Researchers say a maximum of less than 10,000 Humboldt penguins are left in the wild, with their population size undergoing extreme fluctuations. The species face emerging threats from agricultural activities to their own vulnerability to predators. The Humboldt penguins are only found along the Pacific coast of Chile and Peru and are enlisted as threatened species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
A passionate Indian teacher has turned a road into a classroom and houses walls into blackboards to make up for the prolonged school shutdown caused by COVID-19. Deep Narayan Nayak is working with nearly 60 students in a small tribal village in the eastern state of West Bengal. He started to teach students, most of whom are first-generation learners, last year, when all local schools closed under lockdown restrictions. Nayak says that he was worried about his students' education since many of them did not have access to smartphones or internet connection. But thanks to his initiative, his students can learn everything from popular nursery rhymes to the importance of masks.
We are teaching children everything, how to maintain social distancing, how to wear a mask, what is the importance of masks and hand washing. The children came forward and participated in this initiative, and they are also educating others.
The parents and villagers are grateful to Nayak, saying that they are happy their children are no longer wasting their time loitering around in the village. Nayak is now popularly known as the teacher of the street among the villagers. Water scarcity is a significant and accelerating problem for people worldwide. A UK-based charity, WaterAid, has installed life-size ice sculptures in London to show the fragility of water and the threat posed by climate change.
Climate change is water change, so it means that droughts will get longer, which means that previous reliable sources of water just won't be there. It means that flooding, sometimes in the same country, becomes very severe, polluting water sources and destroying infrastructure. But it also means unpredictability. Water sources that people have relied on for generations, for farming as well as for their health and hygiene, are just no longer there.
Farr, a policy analyst for WaterAid, said people with no access to clean water are bearing the brunt of climate change. The sculptures opposite Tower Bridge are part of the charity's fight, which calls on the British government to increase funding for climate adaptation. The sculptures show how clean water is essential for human survival, with some being depicted carrying buckets and pots in search of water. The environmental group wanted to highlight the threat climate change poses to our planet.
Egyptian archaeologists have completed the renovation of a tomb of an ancient king, providing a rare glimpse into the world's oldest known pyramid. The 4,700-year-old Step Pyramid was built during the reign of King Djoser. The southern tomb is the second for the king and is smaller compared to royal tombs. Some researchers suggest it was built for the preservation of Djoser's internal organs, while others say it was built symbolically. It had been undergoing renovation for 15 years before being reopened to the public.
120 tons of blocks were raised by Egyptian hands, astonishingly and with a determination to achieve one goal. That is the reconstruction of the tomb, just as it was 4,700 years ago.
The complex is historically significant, as it is the earliest known example of the Egyptian custom of pharaohs being buried in pyramid-shaped tombs. According to experts, ancient Egyptians believed that this step design served as a gigantic stairway of the soul of a deceased pharaoh that could ascend to the heavens.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny, dear brothers and sisters, all around the world. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Q&A in Islamic beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we are trying to touch and talk about some, let's say, questions or misunderstandings which are being asked by different questioners about the theological issues and any question regarding the religious concepts. For this, we invite Islamic researchers and scholars from Qom Seminary Schools to help us with the answers. That's why we have invited Sheikh Murtada Karimi to join us in this studio and help us with answer. Sheikh Murtada, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah and thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation, Sheikh. The question of the day that we need to ask it now from a respected guest speaker, Sheikh Murtada Karimi, is concerning a question which is usually being asked from the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, from the Shias, that why you people try to mourn or cry over the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the tragedy of Karbala. If you believe that shahada or martyrdom paves the way for a person to enter paradise or Jannah, then don't you think that he attains happiness and prosperity in both worlds? So for a person who is going to be happy and prosperous, so what does it mean that you start crying and, let's say, mourning for him ages and ages? Don't you think that you need to correct this action and attitude of yours? So this question is usually being asked from the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, and we need to ask Sheikh Murtada to shed some light on this issue to see what is the philosophy of these cryings and mournings. If really we believe that martyrdom is prosperity, so why should we cry? Why should we mourn over him? We should be happy and show our happiness. This is what is being asked, Sheikh.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Usually this question is asked by the Wahhabis, and we see that Ibn Taymiyyah, the forefather of this school of thought, Maybe he's the first one who has mentioned that. In one of his books, the famous book, Minhaj al-Sunnah al-Nabawiyyah, Volume 1, page 52, he says that he talks about the Shia, and he says that وَمِنْ حِمَاقَتِهِمْ إِقَامَةُ الْمَأْتَمْ وَالنِّيَاحَ عَلَى مَنْ قَدْ قُتِلَ مِنْ سَنِينْ عَدِيدًا. One of the foolish actions of the Shia is that they hold sessions, mourning ceremonies for a person who was killed many years ago. In another place, he says that one of the bid'ah innovations of the Shia is bid'atul huzn wal buka wal nawh yawm ashura. The fact that they mourn for Imam Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Ashura. Now, the question, as you mentioned, reads that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, according to the Shia, is in paradise. Of course, in the paradise which is related to the world of Barzakh. And he is happy, so why do you mourn? There are different aspects to this question. First of all, I mean, there are different philosophies for why Shia mourn for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. We believe that one of the reasons for this mourning ceremony is that we remember Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the philosophy of his uprising, which was the uprising of the oppressed people against the oppressive rulers. And that is why we see that during the history of Shia, maybe in most of the cases they were inspired by Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam to rise against the oppression and the oppressive rulers of the time. Nowadays we see in, I mean, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Iran in 1979, all these revolutions, all these uprisings against the oppressive rulers, they are inspired by the revolution of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And this is one of the philosophies for crying. And then the second point is that it is also a matter of emotion. I think I mentioned in one of the previous episodes that if, for example, our father passes away, we will mourn for him maybe a couple of days. Yeah. Now imagine that he is a very righteous person. So for that, we may mourn for him more because he has been, let's say, the most righteous person in our city. Now, imagine that he did not die a natural death. Rather, he was brutally killed. Then we will, the children will mourn for him more.
But it is said that you will cry for him for 1 year, 2 years, not for 14th century. This is the question that this person actually wants to make it out here.
I'm talking about the emotions to show that it's also a matter of emotion. And then we can add that not only our father has been brutally killed, but also, a great number of our family members. Again, we'll cry for him and for them more and more. And we can add that the family members have been imprisoned and so on and so forth. So for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, we have all of them, and the most righteous person on the earth was martyred by those people. So it's a matter of emotion too.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Now, the question reads that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is paradise. Why do you cry for him? The main answer to this question is that the fact that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is in paradise doesn't mean that it's illogical for us to cry for him. Because for sure these Wahhabis also, they believe in their, books of hadith and narration. When we refer to the verses, when we refer to the narrations in Sunni books, we have so many examples in which we know that, we have a martyr, for example, and the Holy Prophet himself has cried for him. Inshallah, I will mention some examples. Now, the question is that for Hamza, for example, the uncle of the Prophet, the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family himself, he cried for him. And we know that Hamza, alayhi salam, for sure was a martyr and he was in paradise. So why the Holy Prophet cried for him?
Why Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha, went to his grave and cried over him for even years after his martyrdom, till the time that she was martyred?
Inshallah, I will explain about the details for Hamza. Yeah, you're right. So I want to say that, the fact that a person is in paradise doesn't mean that we are not allowed to cry for him. So Hamza is in paradise. So why the Holy Prophet cried for him?
Yeah.
I will bring inshallah, many examples, because it's a very important topic, about many narrations in Sunni sources which refer to the fact that, the Prophet and his companions, which are holy to our Sunni brothers, they have cried for some people who passed away or were martyred.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I mentioned, the first example is Hamza. He was martyred in the Battle of Uhud. Halabi, in his Sirah, he says, Asiratul Harabiyya, volume 2, page 247, Lamma ra'a an-nabi Hamzata qatilan baka. When the Holy Prophet observed that Hamza has been killed, he cried. فَلَمَّا رَأَى مَا مُثَّلَ بِهِ شَهِقٍ. We know that the body of Hamza was mutilated somehow. When the Holy Prophet saw his body being mutilated, then he شَهِق, he cried loudly.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Ibn Mas'ud says that we did not see the Holy Prophet crying for any person as he cried for Hamza. And not only that, Ibn Mas'ud continues, he says, ثُمَّ وَقَفَ عَلَى جَنَازَتِهِ وَانْتَحَبَ حَتَّى بَلَغَ بِهِ الْغَاشِيَ. The Holy Prophet cried so loudly that he fainted.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Holy Prophet crying for a person who is for sure in paradise. And then he began, crying, Ya Amma Rasulullah, Ya Hamza, O Uncle of the Rasulullah, O Hamza. This is in the Dakhail al-Uqba, page 181. Now, interestingly, we see that it's been mentioned in many historical sources, mainly by Sunni scholars, that after the Battle of Uhud, we know that a number of Muslims, they were martyred. The Holy Prophet passed by some of the houses of the Ansar, of the helpers, and he saw that the women are crying for their dear ones who were martyred in the Battle of Uhud. Then the Holy Prophet, according to this narration, فَدَرِفَ دَعَيْنَا رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهُ وَلِهُ وَسَلَمْ فَبَكَى. The holy eyes of the Prophet were filled with tears, and he cried, and then he said, لَكِنَّ حَمْزَ لَا بَوَاكِيَ اللَّهِ. As for Hamza, he doesn't have any person to cry for him. Then the, according to this narration, Sa'd ibn Ma'ad and Usayd ibn Hudayr, they went to those women, and they told them that you need to cry for Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet, too. It's been mentioned that from that time onward, whenever the women in city of Medina, they wanted to cry for any person, they began to cry for Hamza. So it was not only 1 year, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was many years. I have some points to confirm that. For example, Ibn al-Kathir says that up until today, when women, they want to cry for their dear ones, first they cry for Hamza. Ahmad ibn Hanbal narrates that Ibn Umar says that when the Holy Prophet says that there is no one to cry for Hamza, then the Holy Prophet came to know that women are crying for Hamza. Then he says, فَهُنَّ الْيَوْمْ إِذَا يَبْكِينَ يَنْدُبْنَ بِحَمْزَ. Up until today, whenever any person wants to cry for anyone, they begin by crying for Hamza. And the last one that I would like to mention is about, is mentioned by Waqidi, the famous historian. He passed away in 207. Mm-hmm. And he says that, فَلَمْ يَزَلْنَ يَبْدَأْنَا بِالنَّدْبِ لِحَمْزَ حَتَّى الْآنَ. Up until today, which is about 200 years.
150 years maybe. After
he passed away in 207. Uhud was in the third after Hijrah. So it's
almost 200 years.
200 years. So still Waqidi says that up until my time, people cry for Hamza first, then for their dear ones. So it's not a matter of time. This is one case, the fact that the Holy Prophet himself cried for Hamza, and the Muslims, they took it as an example, and they cried for Hamza as well.
Very true.
The second one is Ja'far ibn Abu Talib. We know that in the Battle of Mu'tah, three Muslim commanders were killed, were martyred. The first one was Ja'far ibn Abi Talib. It's been mentioned that when the Holy Prophet came to know that he's been martyred, he went to the house of Ja'far. He called his sons, and then he hugged them, and he began to cry. Asma, the wife of Ja'far, she came to know that something has happened. So she asked the Prophet, have you received any news? And the Holy Prophet said that, yes, they have been martyred. And then Asma began crying. Fatima al-Zahra came, and she began crying. And then the Holy Prophet said, عَلَى مِثْلَ جَعْفَرْ فَلْتَبْكِ الْبَوَاكِ. For a person like Ja'far, those who cry should cry. This has been mentioned in many Sunni sources. Mm-hmm. So again, it is telling the people that, it is the Sunnah, it is the tradition of the Prophet to cry for those people who are martyred. And we know that there are narrations from Prophet about the great status of Hamza in paradise. Yeah. So Ja'far is in paradise, but the Holy Prophet says that people should cry for him. Very so they are not against each other. The fact that a person is in paradise and other people may mourn for him.
Yeah, very true. And even for those who have not yet been martyred, like Khadija salam Allah, the first lady who accepted Islam, the only Prophet himself started crying over her after her demise. And it was famous that Prophet...
Yeah, it's not limited to martyrdom. You have different cases
of natural death. For example, Lady Khadija, who was the first person who accepted Islam, and her status among the Muslims and also in the words of the Holy Prophet in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is quite clear for all. So we see that for a person like her, the Holy Prophet cries very deeply. Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your enlightenment and for your explanations in this regard and different cases that you mentioned from the pieces of history and the dawn of Islam, where Prophet or even other companions started crying over the martyrs of Islam. And this shows and this proves to us that crying and, let's say, mourning over a person who got martyred or even died among the Muslims is not something bad, and it is even something that was recommended by the Holy Prophet. As we have seen, the Prophet says those who cry have to cry over Ja'far. So we see that he recommends the Muslims or those who are the people of crying, the criers, to cry over her, to mourn over him. This is what we are going to learn from the conduct and the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet. What is the Sunnah then? What is the tradition of the Holy Prophet? Is it something that we have actually innovated from our understanding? No, this is the Sunnah which is being mentioned and actually has been found from the books of Hadith and books of narrations. Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your explanations, and your respected listeners for staying tuned and listening to IRB English Radio, the program entitled as Q&A in Islamic Beliefs. Till our next session, I'll leave in Allah's protection. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan.
fruitful moments with IRIB English Radio.